Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Hello, welcome to Motivation to Write. Thank you so much for joining me today. This is my kind of like a season finale for season one. I am sharing with you my favorite moments from my guests. But before we get to those favorite moments, let's catch up. My virtual cocktail party for women who write is fast approaching. It happens on January 8th, 2021 at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. This is an opportunity for women, writers, and entrepreneurs and bloggers to gather and share our goals for 2021, to share marketing tips, to share our experiences with how we take care of ourselves as writers and as entrepreneurs, to encourage each other. So if this sounds like something that you're interested in, then please visit my website, zayzoh.com. That's zayzoh.com. And I have more details about the event there, and you can RSVP. When you go to zayzoh.com, just click events and you will find all the information there. So that's my virtual cocktail party happening January 8th. RSVPs close on January 1st. Now let's get to our clips. So this first favorite moment comes from CEO and entrepreneur Kuda Biza, who shares why it's important to stay open to possibilities. So let's tune in to Kuda Biza.
Stay, you know, open to possibility.
Yeah.
You want to stay open to possibilities, because then you might find out in your quest of going somewhere that, oh, there's something bigger and better that I could actually do. So like, let's say for me, for example, I had to stay open to possibilities. So when that call came to say like, hey, do you want to come build this cookie company with us? Although I was in corporate America, I had a really good job. I became open to the possibility of like, you know what? I can actually go do this. I can go and work with these guys, and we can feed and change a lot of lives. But I had to be open to that possibility. Right. Because if I wasn't open to it, then I'll be like, hey guys, you know, I'm fine with what I'm doing. I'm in my comfort zone, you know, blah, 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 right, blah. I don't want to take a risk. But sometimes if you really want to achieve success and fulfillment, which was the case for me, I had to stay open to that possibility, because my corporate job was giving me success. I wasn't fulfilled. But because I was open to the possibility of going and trying something new, something that would, you know, give me fulfillment, I was then able to find both. So that's the bonus chapter. It's not in the book, but if you buy the book, there's a link in the book where you can actually then go read the Stay Open to Possibilities chapter. But that's the last one.
That's huge. That's really big, because I think a lot of people, they get so narrow sighted, and you know, they only see what's in this box that they're in. Like, they can't see outside of the box, and that just keeps them trapped. And mm-hmm. So I think this is why a lot of people just feel like they're stuck. It's like you're stuck because you don't even, you can't see outside of this box that you're in. There are so many other possibilities for yourself, but I think we get mired in the bad feelings of where we are, like the frustration, that we just don't see the possibilities.
Yeah. So I'll bring it home to, let's say if you're a blogger and you're trying to build an audience, you might want to stay open to the possibility of going beyond just blogging. Perhaps start a YouTube channel, right? Because you need to think about it, that there are some people who need the content that you have, but they don't read blogs. There may be podcast people, right, who want your information. So is there a way that you can be open to the possibility of maybe recording that content and turning it into a podcast, turning it into a YouTube channel, you know, mm-hmm. and things like that. So that's what I mean by staying open to possibilities, because then you can then start to think about how you can repurpose that same content into different formats so that you can actually reach more people. And what's interesting is, let's talk about YouTube, for example. Do you know that YouTube is the only social media platform where your content over time actually grows in terms of, let's say, viewership? So like, let's say on Instagram, right? If you post a story, it goes away in 24 hours. So people won't be able to see that content anymore. If you post a picture, it gets pushed down, you know, down. So people will only be seeing what's at the top of your profile, unless if they scroll all the way to the bottom. But on YouTube, they reward you for when people listen to your content, you know, for a long time, and they stay there. They'll start showing you organically. So that's why if you post a video, over time, if it's really good content, you actually see that you actually have more viewership over time, and it might even have more engagement over time, but no other platform does that. Even a blog, right? So with your blog, if you've written it today, 10 years from now, Google is going to consider it not relevant, right? Because there's newer content that say like, oh, this was written 3 months ago. You know, it's much more relevant and present. So you might still have good content, but because it's 10 years old and you haven't updated it, it gets pushed down in the search results. So nobody's going to be opening page 7, right? People are always page 1, 2, and maybe 3. But on YouTube, that's why you will see like your content will gain more viewership over time, because the algorithm will be saying like, oh, million people have seen this and they like it, and they've seen like 90% of this video. So we need to show it more. We need to reward this content to show it more. So you need now to stay open to that possibility of like, hey, maybe I need to branch out into other platforms that might give me more visibility. And yes, you can have call to actions to drive that traffic to your blog, but that's kind of like the mindset I'm referring to where I'm saying stay open to possibility.
This next clip is featuring Dr. Oren Davis, who talks about, in this episode, he talked about how we can reach our full potential. In this particular clip, he shed some light on how people really see us, because we can get so caught up in our heads about what we think people are saying about us or how we think people are judging us or criticizing us. And Dr. Oren Davis gives a new perspective on how people might really be looking at you. So let's take a listen.
But the irony is, in many cases, people see us as something far greater than what we are. Because we know all the little flaws, we know all the little quirks that we have, all the little mistakes we made. It's a funny exercise I do with my students, and this is hilarious because it almost always works exactly this way. They give a presentation, and then I ask them how often they think they made a mistake in the presentation. They think that they made a slew of mistakes in the presentation. The audience didn't notice any of them.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, I've been there. Yeah.
It's incredible because we notice all our mistakes, but most other people, first of all, they don't notice, and second of all, they honestly don't care.
Right, I think that we think that people are thinking way more about us than they actually are. Like, people just are not thinking about us that much.
Yeah, we're just not that important. But we're that important to ourselves. And that's the thing. It's hard for us to see past the fact that to ourselves, we're extremely important. Mm-hmm. I mean, we ought to be. But to everybody else, we're not that important. And that is simultaneously both a sobering and humbling fact, but also a relief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that
it
we
is.
Just don't matter that much. It's okay. You're not that. Don't worry so much. You're not that important. You are important, but you're not that important.
Right. That's so funny. And go on and finish.
So as we're talking about the visions that other people have of us, we need to be willing, we need to have the courage to accept the fact that we might just be better than we are. And that's hard because we're often taught to be hard on ourselves. We're taught to see the flaws, and we know what we mean to be. The irony is, right, nobody knows what you mean to do. People only know what you actually do. Unfortunately, you know what you meant to do. So if you do this amazing thing, according to everybody else, but it's nowhere near as good as what you meant to put out, you're like, damn, I'm such a failure, and everybody else is giving you a standing ovation.
Right. Yeah.
So can you put that aside and accept the standing ovation? Alternately, you think you did an amazing job, but it totally flopped. Can you put aside that fear of the implications that you totally flopped to accept it as a learning experience? That takes a lot of courage, and to face it and to look it in the mouth and in the face, and to look into this yawning maw of doubt screwed up and you're a failure and you're never going to make it and you are forevermore a complete and total 100% loser who is not worth living in, right? That can be our interior monologue. And just accept the fact that, yes, you failed here, but the fact of the matter is not everybody thinks you're a total failure, you know, permanently and forever.
Why is our self-talk so traumatizing at times and abusive? Is it because that where our minds are trying to protect us, and so they're always looking for stuff that can go wrong?
In certain respect, that is a common strategy. Yes, we wanna predict all the things that go wrong. That way, if it doesn't come out as bad as we thought, at least, you know. Yeah. I mean, think about it this way: if I tell you something bad is going to happen to you tomorrow, and you prepare yourself for disaster, and then what happens is somebody spills a glass of water on you, you're going to be cracking up tomorrow. Right, when I come back, right. I told you something bad was going to happen to you tomorrow. But the thing is that if that doesn't happen, if you don't prepare for it, how would you feel if somebody spills the water on you? You're like, oh my God, I'm wet. Like everybody would out. Like they'd have this whole thing going. Right. But if you've already catastrophized, it's not so bad. And you'd even be laughing. I mean, could you imagine that? Could you imagine that if I told you, you know what, tomorrow someone's going to spill water on you and you're going to think it's funny? Simply because I told you something bad is going to happen tomorrow, so you're going to catastrophize. And when you find out that what I really meant is tomorrow somebody's going to spill a glass of water on you, you're going to be laughing your butt off.
Right, that's true.
I mean, it's true for all of us.
Yeah. Vicky Wu is a marketer who also talks about the inner critic. And she, in this clip, she's sharing how we can unleash our creativity. So she's going to talk a little bit about things that we can do to help boost our creativity and how to handle that inner critic that can be so judgmental and discouraging. So let's listen in to Vicky Wu.
I think people get a little afraid of creativity as well, because maybe they've been led to believe that they aren't creative. Mm-hmm. I'm not a musician, I'm not an artist, whatever, not a poet. Right. And that's those traditionally jobs that we consider creative are not the only way to be creative. Being creative is simply about creating your life. Mm. And we all start in kindergarten, coloring pictures, and, you know, we're told don't color outside the lines. That's because they're trying to actually develop our fine motor skills, not mm-hmm. because they're trying to develop our artistic ability.
Right.
But because we hear when we're so young that, you know, art, which is traditionally thought of as creative, and we're doing it and we're doing it wrong, we tend to start telling ourselves that we're not a creative person. But we all are. We start that way, and then it's kind of schooled out of us to an mm-hmm. extent. Mm-hmm. So the best thing you can do is first believe that you are creative. Start telling yourself that you're creative. And set aside time to just exist in the moment. No planning, no goals, no chores. Ideally, if you can get outside to do that, taking a walk, do it while you're taking a walk and just have no end goal. Just enjoy being in the process, and you'll start unleashing some of that creativity. It doesn't have to be that you go paint pictures, which I happen to do, or go ballroom dance, which I happen to do,
I saw that. I thought that was so cool. I have to tell you, Vicky, about 10 years ago, I took ballroom dance lessons. I did West Coast Swing.
Ooh, I love that one.
And The Hustle. I felt very Saturday night feverish. Yeah, it was great. It was fun. Yeah.
But those aren't the only ways that you can be creative. Just simply tell yourself that you are. And it's not about being artistic in any of the artistic methods. It's just about creating your life. So we can all do that. And being in the moment will let you get there. And the other piece, the most important piece, we all have those inner critics. Mm-hmm. That inner critic that tells you, oh, you're coloring outside the lines.
Yeah.
And most people hear, you'll hear them say, tell that inner critic to shut up. Tell it to be quiet. Don't listen to it. Just shut it down. And I disagree. I think you have to actually not listen to it, but question it. Why is this voice telling me whatever it's telling me? And is that true? Maybe it was true when I was in kindergarten that I colored outside the lines. Is that true now? It may be okay. It may be great that I color outside the lines. And then when you answer why the first time, ask why again. Well, it's because when I was in kindergarten. Well, why? Why does that matter to me now? Well, I don't want people to see me color outside the lines. Why? Are these people you're ever going to see again? Or do they care that you color outside the lines? Keep asking why. And the more you question it, the quieter it will become.
Right. That's great advice, because usually, you do hear people say, ignore it, silence it, the critic. I try to silence it, but it keeps yapping. But if you question it, I think what you're really doing when you're questioning it is you're finding like the core belief.
Right.
Why do I think this way? And then you go back, okay, this happened. What did I get from that situation to make me think that? And once you get down to the core belief, that's when you can really start to, I feel like I'm not smart enough to be creative or whatever it is. Then you're more aware, and you can kind of start to just the awareness will start to heal it.
And after you've shut the inner critic down by questioning it, when it says it the next time, you're going to be like, well, we've already talked about how that's not valid, and you just move on. It helps a lot. Right.
Now we have in the same kind of spirit of Vicky, where she's talking about how important it is to notice or to be present in the moment, to really just take in your environment. Our next clip comes from Dr. Christine Kissinger, who talks about how important it is in our daily mindfulness practice to notice the mundane, to really hone in on the precious moments, and anything that's happening around you, find a precious moment to focus in on. So let's listen to Dr. Christine Kissinger.
So this can be, and this really goes back to a really important principle in mindfulness meditation, which is honoring the preciousness of life. And I'll give you a really quick example of this. Around Thanksgiving, last Thanksgiving, my brother and his wife brought their child for the first time to our Thanksgiving dinner because he was a newborn. But at birth, he had had open heart surgery. So he had a really rough road. But this was his very, very first public gathering. And my mom was holding him. And everyone was nervous. Just nervous. And I could feel the nervous energy in the room, and I could feel myself nervous. So I decided to practice a focus on the mundane. And I noticed that my nephew and my mother's hands were locked. And I could see his hands and against hers. And her hands are much older and his are brand new. And I was thinking about all the ways my mother has used her hands to serve and to love and to care, and all of the ways that he'll do the same. why is this important? It was a moment that I put my focus on. This is a form of meditating. On the preciousness of these two hands joined together, calms me down. It only takes one person in the room to be calm and settled. Because it's contagious.
That's true.
Stress is contagious, and so is calm.
Yeah.
So is there, the mundane might be, this is jasmine tea iced, and I might be having a really hard time right now, but I'm drinking my favorite iced tea. That's where I'm going to put my focus for just a few moments. And it takes me from the turbulence of whatever it was I felt very ensnarled by.
Yeah, I love that image of like your mother's older wrinkled hand with the baby's like tiny hand. That is, I love that because it reminded me of, I recently purchased a juicer, and those can be just a pain to clean like afterwards. And I told myself, I'm going to have to just really become mindful and enjoy the process of cleaning this. Just notice little thing like the bubbles or the feeling of the water.
Yes.
Take my mind out the stress of cleaning it. Right. Yeah.
So that's exactly what I'm talking about. That cleaning the juicer is a mundane task. But if you bring mindfulness to it, it becomes precious. And so just holding that word precious in your mind as something to start looking for. After you and I finish up this conversation, I'm going to take my dog for a walk. Now, I can take the dog for a walk and not be there. Thinking about what's coming next. Or I think I'm going to take her for a walk and really start to notice as many different colored leaves as I can. That's what I'm going to choose to do. And then that becomes a mindful walk. Sometimes when I walk with my niece and nephew and their kids, I'll say, we're doing a color walk and the color is red. I want you to start to notice everything that you encounter that's red. And we will walk the same route for a year now. And they'll say, I never noticed. We walk by this house all the time. This person's mailbox is red. I just like, try it. It's very startling. What your whole world looks different when you're just choosing to mindfully focus on one thing.
Right. Yeah.
These are very mundane tasks. I mean, think about all the times you've had to take a drive and you reach your destination and you think, I don't even remember getting off the exit.
Yes.
You weren't present.
Or not even getting home. Like, how did I get home? I don't even remember. That happens all the time. Yeah.
But it's an incredible practice. Mindfulness practice for stress reduction is, as Dr. Rick Hansen, he's my favorite neuropsychologist, says, at any given moment, even the toughest moment, ask yourself, what in this moment is precious? And maybe it's the scarf that's hanging on the back of a chair across the room from you that your grandmother gave you. That's okay. Every moment contains within it something that's precious that you can take your attention to.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
This next clip comes from Miss Rachelle Wright. She is another phenomenal marketer, and she shed some light on why we might not be getting responses to our social media posts, particularly Twitter. So let's listen in to Miss Rachelle Wright.
These platforms have algorithms and things that they're doing to customize the experience for every individual user. So when absolutely, it's extremely frustrating when we put content out and we think, oh my God, I have 1,000 followers, or I have 5,000 followers, even 10,000 followers. Why are only 100 people seeing this, right? And that's because of a few different reasons. It's A, how consistently are you posting for that platform the way that they want you to? And B, you have no idea what else your followers are engaging with, that like a platform like Twitter is going to, again, their goal is to keep you on the platform, right? So they're going to keep pushing things to you that seem to keep you on the platform, meaning here are things you seem to like or retweet a lot, so we're going to show you more of those people or more or that person's stuff. So what happens is that now you, who may be posting great content, is getting drowned out from just some algorithm process, right? That has nothing to do with really, it's not to say that your content's not valuable. It's just to say that someone else's experience now dictated something else. So on average, you should take your follower count on any given platform and just assume that only about 5 to 8% of those people are going to see what you put out there. It used to be around 10. It's a little less than that now. So really only a handful at a time.
Yeah, I see that a lot too. And I feel that sometimes. I'm like, I have this many followers and I'm only getting this much attention. So is it, when you talk about the algorithm, if I'm following 2,000 people, do I see, I don't see all 2,000 of them. Okay.
No, yeah. And you'll probably notice you see a lot of the same people over and over again, right? I think on I'm not exactly sure what the number is on Twitter, but I do know the number typically on Facebook and Instagram is the last 50 people that you've consistently engaged with that keep showing you over and over again. So if you started digging into that list of people you follow every once in a while, you'd probably be like, oh, I totally forgot I was following that person. And then all of a sudden you'd click on their, and you're going to assume, oh, they must just not be active. And then you're going to click and then you're going to see they are, and you're gonna be like, that's really odd. I wonder why I'm not seeing it. If you start engaging with a few of those posts, Twitter would be like, oh, I guess you want to see that. Here, we'll start showing you that. But then that means sometimes someone else is going to fall off that track. And now we're going to do this cycle again. You know, there used to be a time when things were chronological. They actually had an end. Like, I don't know if you remember at one point in time on Instagram, you could actually, there would be a message at the bottom saying, you saw everything today, right? A long, long time ago, there was a Instagram where you'd get to the bottom of Instagram and they'd say, you read everything today. And you'd be like, oh, okay. But then they developed what's now called infinite scroll, which is what we can do on all platforms where they will let you scroll forever. So there is no bottom. So it's just things to keep in mind that these platforms have their own processes. Mm-hmm. They have their own mechanisms, and every single person who's following you is their screens look nothing like yours, you know, or what you're following, you know, everything's different. So what I suggest is any social media platform you're on, you really need to understand that platform and how to optimize on that platform to just have your best chance, right? So like I said, with Twitter, you got to tweet a lot. You have to tweet a lot. And to be honest, some of your tweets need to just be relevant to whatever's trending sometimes. And so, and this is where your cleverness with writing needs to come into play. How can you tie in something that maybe has nothing to do with what you're talking about, but make it relevant, and now it's timely, and now people can relate to that, you know?
Wow.
So it requires some creativity.
Melanie Hirschhorn is another fantastic marketer. She also has her own podcast called, I can't think of what it's called. But you know what? You can go on my blog and you can find Melanie Hirschhorn's episode and you can find her information. So she talks about, in this clip, she talks about how we can monetize on our skill set and how we can get over the anxiety of charging for our work. So let's take a listen to Melanie Hirschhorn.
You know, I love how, and I know we're out of time. I just want to ask you, I want to talk about one more thing. Sorry. Do you have the time?
Yeah, sure.
Five more
sure.
minutes? Okay.
Yeah, sure.
So when you brought up serving, I think that's something that a lot of people don't really think about when they are blogging, or well, primarily when they're blogging. I'm sure when you start a business, you have to look at yourself as a person of service. But can you talk a little bit more about how important it is to kind of have this mindset of serving people and not just like taking people, like, I want your money in exchange for this, or I want your attention, or I want your time, or.
So I read this phenomenal book called The Go-Giver. Short book, took me like an hour and a half to read. Probably would take most people a half hour. I'm a very slow reader. And I currently have been reading the same book for a year and a half. So if that tells you anything.
That is kind of slow.
It's not totally my fault though. I only read at night and my husband won't let me put the light on. So, but yeah, I'm not a fast reader, but it's a really fast read. And it's told in story format. And at the end, you're just like, oh my God, mind blown. Really, it's about service. We are on this earth to serve and to help. And then when you do that, wonderful things come back to you as long as you're open to receive. Mm-hmm. You have to be open to the good things coming back to you. Mm-hmm. Because if you're shut off, they're not going to be.
So here's where that kind of like that fine line comes in, because mm-hmm. at what point do you start monetizing? I think a lot of people, especially women, and I'm thinking of myself, we feel guilty 100%. About asking for money for anything.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah, we
so
do.
So how do we balance the service with the money?
Okay. I mean, if... It takes practice. I literally sometimes will write an email and then stop and go, not like a newsletter, but I mean like just like an email in my inbox to something that's business related. And I'll read it, I'll go, wait a second, would a man send this? No. Right. And then I delete it all and rewrite it to be more manlike, I guess would be the best way to put it. No justs, no I'm sorries, no, I just wanted to know if, no, please let me know, or please tell me if. Mm-hmm. So how to monetize? All right. You could go charge $1,000 an hour right out of the gate if that's what you think you're owed, but you have to decide. And it's literally numbers, like what's your time worth? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also know that people are going to say, well, I can't afford that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know what? That's not your client.
Right.
Because people will give you what you're worth when they know and you know you are worth it.
Okay. You know, but we're always undervaluing ourselves, I think. So right. I guess that's more of a...
That's a mindset thing. It's a mindset. It really is a mindset thing. I mean, if you've done the 10,000 hours... and you are a poet and a coach and a writer, then people should be paying you what that, you know, the appropriate amount. And right. Don't discount yourself, because I guarantee that there are lots of people out there who are charging more than they're worth, and you are probably not charging enough.
Right. And if you're not charging enough, you're probably overworking yourself.
You're overworking and undervaluing yourself. Right. And how frustrating is that? But you know, everybody starts at the beginning, right? So mm-hmm. yeah, maybe you think your time is worth $50 an hour to begin with. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But then you think, okay, well, you know, I've been doing this for a little while and I think that I can charge $100 for the hour.
Right, right.
And then after a couple of years, you're like, I'm going to charge $500 an hour because that's what my time is worth.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know what, I think the takeaway for me is that it's good. You might need to start off with some free, you do have to start with some free stuff, like give a lot of value up front, right? And then after you get some practice in and you've had some free services and you start feeling a little bit more confident, then actually ask yourself, what is my time worth? What is this service worth? And
yeah, right. And what are other people charging?
Right. Okay.
Find out what other people in your field are charging. Because if they're charging $800 an hour and you're charging $12, there's something wrong, because you also have to remember that people expect to get what they pay for.
Right.
So if you have a logo done for $25, you're going to get a $25 logo.
Right.
You get a $1,000 logo plus, you know, graphic design and your colors and blah, blah. That's what you're going to get.
Right. Yeah. I remember my mother said to me once, cheap will cost you expensive.
She's right. Cheap will cost you expensive, because you have to go do it over again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's true. It's true. Yeah. So when you think of it in that sense, remember that what you're offering, you really are the expert in. I think we started with that. So we're full circle now.
They are, yeah.
You are the expert in it. So people should pay you because they don't have that expertise and you do.
Music therapist Noah Anderson had some amazing tips to share on how we can use music to help reduce stress and bring meaning and mindfulness to our lives. In this clip, she kind of sums up all that she had shared with us in the episode, but I really like what she says about how you're never too old to learn music. You're never too old to learn a new instrument. So let's take a listen to Noel Anderson.
Hey, just remember that you are not your feelings. The cat wants to tell that as well.
The cat second that one. Yes, meow, meow.
Yeah. Yeah, when we say I am stressed, it's like it's overpowering us. It's like I am the stress, but you're not. You're feeling stressed, and the stress, that feeling, is just telling you that something you value is being challenged. So whether that's you feel stressed because you want to spend more time with your family and you're stuck at work. Mm-hmm. You feel stressed because whatever. But the key is to realize, okay, what value of mine is being challenged in this moment? Mm-hmm. That's the reason I feel this way. And so that's the thing to tackle. That's the thing to process. That's the thing to figure out a solution for. So you can overcome that feeling. And of course, I encourage you to use music to meet all the areas of self-care, whether that's physical, spiritual, emotional, social, psychological. There's ways we can build music into our day. Physically moving, like you said, to the music. Exercising with music helps us. It feel easier. Also, listening to music maybe when you're praying or reading a spiritual book can help you to focus and get more in tune with being in the moment. Listening to music and processing your emotions, like we talked a lot about today. If you can socially distance with some coffee and listen to some music with a friend, you get, the social aspect, and you get the emotional aspect with being able to share that music with somebody, and then maybe learn a new instrument, psychological, self-care, keeping your brain limber and learning something new. We're never too old to learn.
Right. You can pick up a kazoo, right?
Oh, yeah. Kazoo choir.
Yeah, those are great. There was this commercial of like last year. That was great. Was it Facebook or something? I think it was a commercial for Facebook, but yeah, that was great.
Like Facebook groups or something.
Yeah.
Motivational speaker and author, Sir Amazing. I love almost everything he says is just like gold. But in this particular clip, he's talking about how important it is to know what we really want and how we can take action on our goals, our dreams, our desires. So let's take a listen to Sir Amazing.
If you want it, then you're going to do it. Sometimes we say we want things, but we don't really want them. It feels good to say we want to do things. It feels good to say, oh my gosh, I want to go to I want to be on the beach in Mexico, but you don't want to work extra hours so that you can get the money so that you can be on the beach in Mexico. You don't want to do that. You didn't really want it.
Right.
So that's the first thing, but also this, the amount of self-doubt and negativity that creeps into our minds is scary.
Yeah.
And to me, I think that's one of the biggest reasons why people don't pursue the ideas. We start looking at the air in the glass. We're not looking at what's there. We're not thinking about the steps day by day. I'm guilty of it, just like anybody else. For me, people say, man, you need to take a break. You need to slow down. But I'm like, no, I don't even, somebody asked me about an accomplishment, my greatest accomplishment. I don't even know what to say sometimes because I feel like there's so much more work to do. So I'm not even looking back at yesterday, but we have to look back. We have to look at some of the things that we've done so that we, once again, to get that belief, that encouragement, because of everything else that's going to be coming at us as we're pursuing. And I'm huge on seeking, ye shall find. Ask, it shall be given unto you. Knock, it shall be opened unto you. And when you really understand and appreciate those words, that is life in itself. You have to seek. That seek may be the reading, the knowledge, the meditation, and the prayer to me is the asking. That's the asking. The knocking may literally be the knocking. So it may be the emailing, the researching, which is still part of the seeking, the connecting with people, and then asking the questions that are going to ultimately put you in position to achieve what you want to achieve.
That's powerful. That's really powerful. Author and entrepreneur Bill Flynn is so brilliant when it comes to reaching out to your audience, learning about what it is they want and what they need, and delivering. So he, in this clip, is sharing how growing a business, learning your audience, is a constant, joyous discovery. So let's take a listen to Bill Flynn.
But at some point when you put a lot of your content out there, people are, you know, it's like with art, right? You put it out for yourself, but then they put their own meaning on it.
Mm.
And if your meaning is close enough to their meaning and you're okay to go there, then great. Now you have an audience, you know what they want, and it's something that fills you up as well because it's something that you enjoy doing, then go there with them, right? Same thing with the product. Like I said, we thought it was insurance, but it was really set it and forget it, and you know, convenience. We're basically selling time more than anything.
Right.
That's the value they got out of it. So I would say a blogger should try to figure that out. Guess first, but don't stop at the guessing. Once you get some readers, is reach out to them. And you know, there's a blog post, and I can send it to you. We can put it in the notes of this thing, which has a little. I have it, actually. You can cut and paste. I wrote the email for you. You just cut and paste it. You can change it if they're a blogger. They probably want to rewrite it. Perfectly fine. Which basically says, tell me how I helped you. But don't tell me back to me. Tell me as if you're telling someone else that you think would get the same value out of what you're doing. When you put them in that perspective, they think of it differently, because if they're writing back to you, they want to please you. They want, because we, you know, most people are pretty good and we like to help other people and we don't want to upset them. So they're going to say, you know, Ebony, you know, again, your writing style is great and I love what you put out and et cetera. And that may be the answer, but if they're writing it to their friend, they'll probably say something else. You know, when I read Ebony's stuff, you know, I smile. You know, it just makes me feel good. Great, you know?
Yeah. You can kind of get a feel of that, of what people really get from, especially reading material. If you look at some of the book reviews on Amazon, actually, if you go through all of them, like usually the book reviews will say something like, it made me feel, or I learned this, or I love this writer's style. There's usually also some like common thread amongst comments for a particular.
There is, but again, I would say I would contact those people and say, which of the posts that I put out would be at the top of the stack of that feeling that you wrote about in your review? Because it's not everything you write. You're not going to hit the nail on it every time.
Right.
And then you start to look into that thing. Okay, so let's pull that up. Tell me where, which sentence, or which paragraph, or whatever. That's what you want. And you said you felt joy. Tell me more about that, right? What did you do with that joy? Did you get up and go for a run? Did you, get, and that's the kind of information that you want, because if you do that enough times, you'll start to see stuff and you're like, oh. And then if you start to analyze the stuff that you learn from them, you might be able to figure out, I see where a lot of my readers are getting what I want them to get. Mm. I need to start writing more like those paragraphs that I wrote in those six different blog posts. Not the blog post, but the paragraph in the blog post.
Right.
It's a constant journey of discovery.
Author Bridget Jackson Buckley shared her amazing story with us about how she went from financial failure to finding a life of purpose through meditation. She, in this clip, shares how we can really uncover our truth, how we can start to excavate through all the stuff that we think we want based on what other people have been telling us, or who we think we are based on what other people have been telling us, how to get all of that, how to get beneath all of that and find out who it is we really are and what we really want in life. So let's listen to Miss Bridget Jackson Buckley.
How do we learn to fully accept who we are? Does it come with, because you know what I was thinking when you were talking right now? I was thinking, I'm sorry, I have allergies and my nose keeps bothering me, but I was thinking of Byron Katie. I'm sure you've.
Oh yeah.
Okay. And her, I remember she said that we spend so much time in other people's heads.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to figure out what they're thinking, and we just need to stay out of their heads, because we can never know what someone is thinking anyways. Totally. Yeah. So is it first learning how to mind our own business, our own heads, and stay out of other people's heads, like the first step toward fully accepting you for you? Because most of our perceptions of ourselves come from other people, what other people are mm-hmm. saying about
mm-hmm.
us,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
or we think they're saying about us.
I think that it's the process of, like I said, unlearning like what's really not you, and really, really examining why you're doing what you're doing and values underneath what you're doing. Why are you doing this? Why do you need this? Is it because you are trying to get, I have a little exercise for this in the book. I can't remember what chapter it was, but it was like I just keep drilling down with why.
Mm.
You know, I want to, I don't know, own a mansion. Why? Well, then we'll have space. Why do you need space? Well, everybody can be there. Why does it matter if everybody, like, you know, you get what I'm saying? Like, you just keep asking the why, really, like, why do I care what they think? Because I value their opinion. Why do I value their opinion? Well, because these people I love and these people I want their respect. Why do you want their respect? Just keep with the why until you can get down to something that clarifies like what's underneath all of those layers of those beliefs and actions that may not be yours.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So now we're coming full circle. Our first clip, if you remember, was from Kuda Biza, who talked about staying open to possibilities. This final clip is my very first guest, author Carol G. She's author of The Venus Chronicles. And this really resonates with Kuda, her story that she's going to share in this clip, resonates with Kuda's message of staying open to possibilities, because Carol is sharing how she came into her writing career. And her writing career really would never have taken off if she had not stayed open to possibilities. So let's listen to the delightful Carol G.
Anticipated reaching my 50th birthday, I was having lunch with a young woman whom I mentor. And after we finished eating, we had a couple of cocktails. And I shared with her that if I ever was going to write and really try to make a living at it, whatever the time was now, you know, because, you know, time was running by me. And so she's a person like myself. And she said, well, what would you write about? And I said, really, I don't know. They always tell you to write about what you know. I said, at that time, the only thing I knew that was probably I could write a lot about was serving in the military as one of the earlier women to join the military service. And then I thought about it and I said, you know, how interesting would that be to a lot of people? You know, obviously military people would probably be interesting, but not to other folks. And I said, I want to write something that will resonate with a bunch of folks. So I tell people the catalyst happened one day. I was on my job. I worked for a little bit over 20 years at Emory University as an administrator. And I was on my job one morning at 10 o'clock. Something terrible happened. My one strap of my bra fell down off of my shoulder. And I pulled it up, and then the other one slipped down. And while I was trying to rearrange everything and get it all situated under my bosom, it, you know, felt like it was really weird. So I told my administrative assistant, I said, if anybody looking for me in the restroom. So I went into the restroom, tried to rearrange everything under my bosom, and I had on an underwire bra. Well, as I rearranged things, one of the underwire bras popped out.
Oh my God.
I couldn't put it back in. So I'm like, okay, I can't walk around with this thing sticking me. So I said, okay, I'm just going to pull it out. So I go back to my desk and I tell my administrative assistant, who I was very close to. I worked in a department that we were like family. So I was telling her what had happened. I said, do I look funny? Does one look all, you know, uplifted to the other one not? You know, she said, I can't tell the difference. I was like, well, good. Because it was just 10 o'clock. I still had to 5 o'clock to go to work. So on my lunch break, I sat down and I jotted down this whole episode, the bra and how it frustrated me and how, you know, one time I was all uplifted and separated and the other breast not so much. And I jotted this down, a few words, and then I just sent it to my girlfriend who worked down the hall. But she read it, text me back or email me back, said, girl, this is the craziest thing I ever heard. She said, you know, I've had instances like this. And so she was chuckling because I, you know, added more stuff to it. And she was chuckling. She said, can I send it to my two sisters? I said, well, sure, you know. And so I worked full time. And for a while, I was a reservist. And I have a husband. So, you know, imagine my plate was full. So I didn't get a chance to write all the time. But as stupid stuff started to happen to me, I just jotted it down and just sent it to a few friends who wanted to send to their mom, wanted to send to their cousin, to their girlfriend. All fun. No profanity, no gratuitous sex. It's, you know, fun.
Right.
And it became this cult thing. Then women would say to me, when's the last time you wrote something? And I'd say, oh, I wrote it this week. Well, how come you didn't share it? And I'm like, okay, I'll send it to you. And I remember I went to a ladies' night out at my supervisor's house. They were all these beautiful African-American women, very accomplished. And, you know, we all were kind of sharing our own personal stories. And one of the ladies there, she said, I love your pieces. Have you considered putting them in some kind of book? Well, Ebony, I hadn't gotten that far. I had just, you know, write this down, share it with a friend, move on kind of thing, you know? And I said, well, you know, a lot of people have told me I need to compile these and put them in some kind of book. And so about 3 days after this event, the same lady called me and she said, Carol, I love your pieces. They are funny. Women can relate to them, you know, da, da, da. I want you to talk to this lady. And she gave me this person's name. Unbeknownst to me, the individual she put me in touch with was a friend of a lady here in Atlanta that owned a small publishing press. And that, as they say, that's how the Venus Chronicles came to be. The Venus Chronicles, I saw that little book as a spoof between Men from Mars, Women are from Venus kind of thing.
I just love Carol's story because it's a wonderful demonstration of how we can take the mundane, what we talked about earlier with Dr. Kissinger, these moments in our lives that we tend to overlook, sometimes on purpose, like in the instance of Carol, where there might be moments that we are too embarrassed to share, but she was able to take even those moments, the embarrassing moments, and turn them into something so healing and so entertaining for other women. She was totally open to the possibilities of where these where these occurrences in her life can take her. And I think that she's just a great example of what can happen when we're just open. So if you want to listen to the full episode, please go to zazo.com and listen to Carol G's episode because she's a delight to talk to. And this is the end of season one.
Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will see you next Saturday for first episode of season 2 with psychotherapist and author Bridget Dinkle Gaspard. She is going to talk to us about how we can push through our goals and not give up too soon, and how we can enlist different parts of our personality to help us reach those goals. It's a fabulous conversation. I am so excited to share it with you. So please tune in next Saturday to Motivation to Write. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. Have a safe and happy new year. Okay, bye-bye.